I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Kay He. Kay is the creator of Rad Reads and Quartz's first entrepreneur in residence. Kay grew up in New York City and spent 14 years as a hedge fund investment analyst. The last 8 years were at BlackRock, where he oversaw the New York research team for the firm's alternative advisors unit. He left in 2015 to explore projects focused on community, generosity, and introspection. Kay, welcome to the show.
David, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you on. And I wondered, tell me a little bit about why you decided to leave corporate life.
I decided to leave. It wasn't a binary moment, but I had been in the same seat, in the same part of the financial services industry for 14 years. And I had noticed a few things. One was with every year that passed, I was becoming more and more specialized. And I was very, very good at this tiny, tiny, tiny sliver of the investing universe, which was, to be specific, investing in hedge funds that were traded by computers. So computer-driven trading strategies.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty specific.
That's specific. I knew it well. But as I was looking around, I had some passion projects. I loved bringing people together. I was starting to write on the side. And I realized that I just didn't want to just be committed to such a narrow, narrow intellectual challenge. And I thought that what I was seeking was really a new intellectual challenge. The other thing was that as a Wall Street analyst, I found the industry to be very much a zero-sum game, or at least the mindset was that of a zero-sum game, where for every winner, there's a loser. I buy a stock from you, I won, you've lost. Or, you know, the industry would always use a lot of like war and combat analogy. And I looked around to companies that I admired and a lot of new economy companies, and I saw that a lot of these new companies and smaller companies were much more dynamic, and they didn't operate from this zero-sum nature or this kind of command and control and fear-based mindset. And so I really wanted to explore what type of work environment would satisfy that need.
You know, it's interesting because certainly in the world of entrepreneurs, the narrower your niche is, the deeper you're able to penetrate your market. And I'm finding something a little counterintuitive in what you've described with regard to your niche in the corporate world, but I can certainly understand what you've described about looking at how companies are run and that there's been a change in corporate culture with newer companies.
Yeah. I would also point out, though, that in terms of, I completely agree with the specialization as it relates to entrepreneurship, and it's something that I'm experiencing right now. But even as a solo entrepreneur, solopreneur right now, there's the range of ways in which I spend my day are so varied. So even though my topic matter is very specialized, I could be thinking about recruiting at one moment, branding at another moment, growth strategy at a third moment, writing original content in another moment, and trying to figure out something from a technology perspective. And so there is the specialization of the business itself, and then there's a specialization of the role. And I guess that's just a difference between the two. And I was definitely craving both, but also particularly in the generalization of the role.
Yep, I couldn't agree with you more. So that being said, okay, what is Rad Reads?
That's a good question. I try to ask myself answer that question for myself as well. I'll go back with the history of what it was, what it began as. And it started as a side project while I was in finance. And it was basically curating 5 interesting articles and telling people why they should read them. And they span technology, innovation, leadership, self-awareness, just very kind of smattering of things. And it really, I jokingly say in its original days, it was a Twitter arbitrage where I was very active on Twitter and most of my peers were not. And so I would find interesting content on Twitter and share it with my friends who weren't on Twitter via email. With time, as I left, though, I began this journey of this long journey of self-exploration. One of the reasons why I left finance was that I was very, in addition to being intellectually unchallenged or stale, I was also emotionally unsettled. And I kind of suffered from what I call the 3 E's. I was envious, entitled, and egotistical, and ego-driven. And I started to really look within and address that unsettledness or poke at it and question it. And what RadReads evolved into was me trying to answer the question for myself. What does it mean to live a fulfilled life? And I started to basically adapt the rigor that I would have used as an investment research analyst to try to think what Eastern philosophers thought about that question, what athletes think about that question, what comedians think about that question, what anthropologists think about that question. And so the content started to evolve towards that very broad question, but without the kind of very like 8 things to do before 8 a.m. type pieces, more evergreen content. Then, as it started to grow, I realized, a second realization was that I was hiding my own story behind curation. So instead of saying, I think I'm feeling X, I would say this in this article, the Rock, the wrestler, is feeling this poverty mindset, and I can relate. But what I really wanted to say was I was feeling that way and this is why, but I didn't have the confidence to do that as a writer or just as a public sharer. And about a year ago, I basically took the jump and started writing very intensively and profusely about mostly my relationship with fear and ego and how it impacts me in business, in life, in my marriage as a parent. And so RadReads has evolved from an email newsletter, which has, you know, over 15,000 subscribers, to a community with events. I speak on the topic. I write very actively on my blog and for courts. And I share a lot of these stories via video, predominantly on Snapchat.
Mm. And what has the result been?
For me, it has been this, emotionally, it's been this like personal catharsis, I guess, where David, I for 35 years, culturally, I grew up, you know, kid of immigrant parents. I was very shy. I was very insecure as a kid. And to go out there and say, these are my scars, these are my fears, it's been really liberating. Because I don't need to keep it in anymore. And so that's been how impactful it's been on my side. However, it's been even more impactful to the community and the readers because pretty much every other day, someone reads or watches something that I produced and says, okay, you have shared something that I have thought about my entire life, but have never verbalized it in my own head, let alone spoken about it with someone else. And that is just an incredible, and I know because I bottled all that in for 35 years. And I know the kind of the catharsis, the cathartic feeling that comes from sharing it and knowing that people, these are very high performers across different industries, different age groups, have some of these, or have these kind of internal, I mean, challenges, it sounds too strong. It's the challenge of the human condition. And to create a safe space through storytelling, to be vulnerable, but also to apply rigor to these questions that mankind has been asking themselves for thousands of years is just a really cool place to be in. And it's very fun to do it across different technology and old school channels like speaking and writing.
Right. And what kinds of interaction do you find happens among your followers?
Mm. It varies because the demographic varies by medium. So initially, it was my peers, late 30s to 50s males, high performing in traditional industries that also were unsettled. You know, they had huge bank accounts and beautiful families and nice apartments, but something was really missing. They weren't happy. They weren't unhappy, but they weren't happy. And it was just this struggle with, I thought I had everything that I'm supposed to have. All the boxes are checked, yet why am I not happy? And that's when it really starts. I lean in with my stories around whether it's our desire to constantly compare one another, ourselves to others and our peers. It gets a little bit more intense with fear. And there's a lot of fear of failure, fear of not being good enough, identity. And then there's one that really resonates with an older crowd is existential fears. Like, do I matter? Have I done enough on this world to matter once I'm gone? And that's not a particularly fun topic to talk about, but I promise you that a lot of late 30s and up males are really pondering that question, but they have nowhere to go to talk about it because it's a little bit taboo. Then if you switch to the younger audience, which is really more through Twitter and Snapchat, same pool of ideas. Obviously a 20, 22-year-old or an 18-year-old is not thinking about the mortality feelings that are triggered by having a child, but same question. I would like to live a meaningful life, which is very much baked into that question, that existential question. It's one of the numerous strands in that fear. And there it becomes slightly more pragmatic about how to think about careers, how to think about relationships, how to think about love, how to think about envy, especially with that younger generation. They're so used to comparing themselves through digital channels.
Mm. And have you found that there are ways that when these ideas get surfaced and people connect to them, are there ways that they can start to gain greater happiness for themselves once they become aware of what some of the issues are?
Yes. And that second part of your question, I think the first part of it is cultivating awareness. And sometimes you might not even know. I give you an example. Over last week, a close friend of mine sold a company for a lot of money. And, you know, I'm in a great place with my work, where I spend my time, my community, but I felt these pangs of envy. And that was kind of my old self, where it's like, I think I could do that. I should be able to do that. Can I do that?
Why am I not doing
it? Yeah, people are going to put this friend, he's in this completely different tier now, just overnight, but he's my friend. And I was so happy for him, so happy, because he did it with such class. And I was like, Kate, step back a minute. What? A, notice that you got triggered very intensely. You know, if someone who purports to be so woke and mindful, you know, just one headline really sent you down an emotional rabbit hole. So then I step back, recollect myself. So the first part is the awareness. And so before, and many of my peers, they wouldn't even notice. They would just feel this need to work harder, but they wouldn't even put the link together of the trigger of the competitive nature and what that. And so that's the first step, is noticing it. Then I have actually very, very specific, because the question about comparing yourselves to others is one that I get asked all the time, from all age groups, especially living in New York City. And so I have a very, very specific formula for that I use and I share with others. The first is, I have a mantra that my coach shared with me, and my mantra is compare despair. And that just starts to quiet the voice. And I know that because I've been using it for a long time. So that's a very, very quick hit. Mm-hmm. Then I remind myself of two, I'm a very analytical person, so I remind myself of two studies. The first is that the marginal utility of a dollar, meaning how happy you are after you hit a certain amount of income, plateaus at $85,000 a year. Obviously, you have to adjust that for cost of living, but it's much lower than you think. So I remind myself of that study, many studies of that nature. And then there's another study that I remind myself of, is that lottery winners and paraplegics are people who experience accidents that lead to paralysis, return to their baseline happiness within a year. So basically, the happiness that they were before they won before the event happened, they return to that within a year. And it really reminds me that these external validations are completely, completely fleeting. And for true happiness, and I prefer calmness, but for true fulfillment, peace, happiness, it really comes from within. And that's where the third leg of my personal framework is I've written my success statement. And so on a piece of paper, I've written five bullet points about what success means to my family and I. And when I get triggered by seeing my neighbor's nicer car than mine, or my friend becoming a multimillionaire, I quickly go back to that statement. And they're actually very simple things. I want to be creative in everything that I do every day. I want to be surrounded by people who provide me great energy and who are willing to accept my energy. I want the flexibility to work whenever I want to work and from wherever I want to work. I want to be the father and the husband that I want to be, meaning like being home for mealtimes and breakfast and picking up from school and things like that. And I would like to surf every morning. And so of those things, I haven't totally, they're more checked than unchecked, with the real unchecked one being the surfing one and some at the margin. So that's one little framework that I use and I encourage people to try when they get that envy bug.
Mm. Okay. How hard is it, once you kind of understand what some of these steps are that we need to go through in order to create greater happiness, what are some of the techniques we can use to try to get the help to be able to do it? Because I suspect that it's one thing to understand, I guess, in the abstract, what steps one needs to take and what questions one needs to ask oneself. But these are really mm-hmm. hard questions. And yep. I would guess that it's easier to do when you are either with somebody who is guiding you individually or when you're with a community of people who are examining some of the same issues.
Absolutely. It's a very difficult and lonely journey. And partially that is the mission of RadReads, is to be another voice as people try to navigate these different topics. I would say that one, for me personally, coaching, I was coached and mm-hmm. still am coached, and I also coach others. I think coaching is huge. Coaching is not cheap, so it's not necessarily accessible to everyone. But I always tell people, you have a yoga trainer, you have a nutritionist, you have a coach to help you navigate New York City public's private school admissions processes. Why would you not get a coach for the most important part of your life? Your life. And I think that there is a stigma around coaching. There's a stigma around marriage therapy. But these things are really, really difficult. And so I just encourage people to just break those stigmas. They're BS. And so that would be one thing. The second is that I think it's really important to understand that these are practices and not goals. You don't pursue the goal of happiness. You develop a practice of happiness. And I love to use the example of like a six pack of abs, not of beer, mm-hmm. where you could work really hard to get a six pack, do lots and lots of sit-ups and crunches. And then the day you get the six pack, you don't stop doing sit-ups. Maybe you could take a little break, but the pursuit of inner calmness is exactly that. It is a practice. There is no end goal, because even when you think you've reached there, something else, life will throw a new challenge at you. And so I think the important thing is to shift out of that mindset that you do a bunch of work and then you've got to figure it out and then you kind of raise your hands and you retire, you did it. It really is something that you chip into, that you incorporate into your day, and you chip away at it every single day. Some days will be much better, some days will be worse, some days you'll skip, but ultimately you create a deliberate practice of happiness, and that will result in happiness. Was that specific enough?
Yeah. And Kay, do you find that there are benefits to pursuing these practices in a community of peers?
Absolutely. I think that the most important thing is the ability to share authentically and vulnerably. And that once you have it in you to do that, then you harness so much strength and compassion and advice and support from people around you. So absolutely, surrounding yourself by people who are compassionate, who listen, who are willing to share back to you is one of the most important parts. And coincidentally, if you look at happiness studies, a huge part of long-term happiness are the people that you surround yourself with, your friends, your spouse, your coworkers, your community. And we've lost a little bit of that in this day and age. And so absolutely, community matters, and particularly communities where it's safe and acceptable to share vulnerably.
Mm. Kay, do you find anything counterintuitive about being in a community of peers working on the same practices versus getting help from a coach on those practices?
I think they work well together. I view the coach as someone who's more of an expert, and so their subject matter expertise, but also their objectivity in the whole relationship is really nice. And in fact, I use my coach as an example. She was incredible, and outside of my family members, the most impactful person in my life. With time, we've become very close friends, and we don't formally work together anymore, but we spend a lot of time together. But that objective accountability has kind of blended a little bit into the friend zone. And so I'm actually eager to find a new coach who will have a little bit more emotional distance from me, but just as much care in my well-being. Conversely, the community of people who know you and friends is of equal importance, because that is a more dynamic and longer term manifestation relationship organism where you may have known people for a very long time, you have shared history, you live in close proximity. So I think that they both matter, but they also serve different purposes.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Kay, whom do you know personally who's been really remarkable at smashing plateaus?
I would say that actually it's a great segue, but a friend of mine by the name of Sunil Arora, but he has a similar journey around being an working at traditional entrepreneurial companies in fintech and in finance and in tech more broadly, and really stepping out to pursue his vocation, which is exactly what you asked in your previous question, guiding others to make those changes, to develop those frameworks for themselves. And Sunil gave me the best advice that I ever received, which, you know, I meet a lot of people, networking, relationship building, whatever you want to call it. And I was always trying to help, you know, if you're an entrepreneur looking for an investor, I could connect you. Or if you're trying to recruit someone, you know, matchmaking. And he said to me, Kay, you're really good at that stuff, and you should continue to do that. But the real gift that you can give someone is to share vulnerably with them, even people who you just met. And that was a bit, at first, I was, you know, that was a time when I was not fully comfortable with that approach. I was more guarded and private, but now it's come full circle where it's almost the only state that I know how to operate in, and it has been one of the most rewarding to me.
Hmm. And Kay, what's coming up for you in the near future? So you've been at this now for a couple years since you've left the corporate world. What do we have to look forward to?
Yes. I have this belief where, you know, if you were a couch potato, if you were physically unfit, if you just walked every day for 20 minutes, your chance of heart disease would plummet. And the 20-minute walk is accessible, it's free, it's class socioeconomically agnostic, and it has a huge, huge impact. And what I realized with myself was that I was an emotional couch potato and never looked within, in part because of the stigma, particularly with males, but in general, in high achieving kind of type A workplaces, there is a stigma with showing weakness, frailty, vulnerability, or even just not knowing the answers. And I think, and I know as a result, people bottle in all of these feelings and it weighs on our emotions, our minds, our souls. And so I'm trying to figure out what the equivalent is of the 20-minute walk for your emotions, for your soul. And what that means specifically is continuing to write and share ideas a lot. I'm in the process of working on a book proposal. I would like to more formally produce videos around these concepts, especially if I can bring in other people to share their experiences and continue to build the community around it. You know, like I said, there's 15,000 subscribers. There are monthly events in New York that have probably 50 to 100 people. I could see a world where the there's a kind of chapters that open in San Francisco, LA, Chicago, DC, and London and Singapore. They're much smaller groups there, but they're growing. And so that would be something, to your point, by community that I would love to see in the world.
That's great. And Kay, how can our listeners learn more about you and follow you?
Great. Thank you for asking. My main source of writing is my blog and my email newsletter, which is radreads, RADREADS.co. From there, you'll see a lot of my original writing, and there's also a subscription link to the email newsletter. And then I'm pretty active on Snapchat, which is my handle is RadReads, and then on Twitter, and that's my full name, which is KHEMARIDH, which will be in the show notes probably.
Okay, it's been a fascinating discussion today about your own transformation from the high achieving corporate life that you were in to what you're currently exploring, how you've built up a community of followers around this notion of trying to focus on community, on generosity, on introspection, on being really true to yourself, and as a result, making the world a better place. So I'm really grateful that you've come on to Smashing the Plateau today to share some of your ideas with our audience. My guest today has been Kay He, the creator of RadReads and the entrepreneur in residence at Quartz. Thank you again, Kay, for joining us.
Thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.